Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Today's Bite Size episode is with Leanne. So Leanne works for the NHS and she talks in her episode about being more organised in sobriety, feeling more energised and overcoming panic attacks. She went sober as she was studying and qualifying as an ODP. And she actually found then things a lot easier. And she talks about how pretty much straight away she started to experience better sleep. So just for the listeners, just to explain what you do for a living, because I think that's very interesting as well.
So I'm an operating department practitioner, more commonly known as an ODP. So we specialise within the theatre department mainly. So we work in scrub, anaesthetics and recovery. We can also work in other areas such as ICU and resus as well. Anything critical care based, basically. But in the trust that I work in, I'm currently working in scrub at the moment, which means you can have a scrub nurse or you could have a scrub ODP. We're both qualified professionals. So we have a mixture of the two. So you might have, say, if you have a student nurse who's qualified, they for their placements, they would go all over. They would go into the community. They go onto wards. They come up to theatres. But ODPs literally specialise within that department. So for the 3 years that we're doing that degree, it is centred around that environment. I've done placements in ICU and resus as well. But at the moment, at present, I'm on the scrub team, which means that I'm at the operating table with the surgeons.
And that must be so rewarding, so interesting.
It is really interesting and it is really rewarding. It's a real privilege to do what I do. You witness people at their most vulnerable. And I have witnessed many patients that we've had to rush in to our emergency theatres on the back of drinking-related illness or emergency. One that particularly sticks in my head. I'd already stopped drinking at this point, and we had a patient who had come in with a gastrointestinal bleed. Now, for people who do drink an awful lot, you get what's called oesophageal varices, which is basically blood vessels in the oesophagus, and they can burst and bleed out. And it is very much a life and death situation. And I had a patient that was rushed in, and it was probably the worst case that I'd seen. And by this point, I think I'd gone about 3 months without a drink. And that was kind of like, that's it, I'm done. I'm done. Not that I'm saying for 1 second that I'd think I'd end up like that. But when you can see physically the damage that alcohol consumption, alcoholism can do to a person, it's really, really, really very sad. Like that day, the image, that video, internal video will play in my head forevermore, I think. I think in anybody that works in the healthcare sector, particularly in theatres, critical care, A&E, there's always going to be one or two more situations, but one in particular will always stick out in your head, and that's probably going to be mine.
Yeah.
I didn't, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, could you see yourself doing this? Obviously, at that point, I was trying to work towards it, but it was kind of like couldn't see light at the end of the tunnel. And now that I am, now that I've qualified, especially at my age as well, I am actually quite proud of myself and I do literally love what I'm doing.
And to qualify as well, to study with a family and, for the last 6 months of it, you were saying?
Last 6 months of it, I didn't drink, so, which actually made the latter part of my degree a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because I had more capacity for, sitting there and studying. It wasn't such a struggle because I wasn't as tired.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
What is your first thing, your first benefit of sobriety?
My first benefit is better sleep. It's not that I ever had trouble going off to sleep. is I had trouble staying asleep. And no matter, it didn't matter how much sleep that I seemed to have, I was always tired. And again, since reading books and kind of like educating myself on what alcohol does to the brain, I understand now why I was so tired, because I wasn't actually getting into a decent sleep cycle. So now it's like a cloud's been lifted. I get out of bed in the morning, I'm actually refreshed. I'm ready to start my day. I don't ever lie in anymore. It's pretty cool because my days are longer. I've got more time to do things and have more energy to do them as well.
Are you going to
That
bed earlier as well?
I do go to bed earlier, probably much to the annoyance of my other half, actually, because he's quite a night owl. And I was a night owl. But I'm thinking about now, I don't know how I used to do that or how I used to stay up till 1 in the morning and then get up as early as I do now. I have no idea, because once it gets to about 10:30, I've had enough.
Half 10, you are a night owl. That's not early.
11 o'clock is like, I know I have to go to bed now. I enjoy, like, it's that time. There's two times of the day when I'm thinking about sleep. When I first put my head onto the pillow, and I'm like, oh, I start to feel really cozy, really relaxed, and then I know I'm drifting off. And then when I wake up in the morning, especially at the weekend, when the house is deathly quiet, nobody's up, and I'm the first one up.
Yeah.
And you get that morning coffee, and like Sunday used to be my most hated day, and now it's my most favorite day. I get that coffee by the patio doors, looking out in the garden, and just having that peace and quiet. And I love it. I really love that.
They call it glimmers, don't they? It's the opposite of a trigger. Heartwarming. This is
Yeah.
why I'm doing it. This is why I'm doing it. And that's the stuff you want to remember.
Yeah. Getting up and seeing the sunrise, whether it be summer, winter, whatever. I like that. I've definitely become more of a coffee drinker now as well. Like, I'm
Yeah.
literally obsessed.
Well,
Yeah.
it's still a drug, but we won't get onto
No, that's
that
not, I'm not ready to give that up yet. No.
one.
My second thing is anxiety has been massively reduced. I always have been an overthinker. I wouldn't say it's disappeared altogether. Obviously, stress is a natural part and a useful part of life for people. But the level of anxiety that I was having was, it was on steroids. It was just constant. When I was having panic attacks and things like that, it was hard to deal with. It was hard to manage. I actually wouldn't wish panic attacks on my worst enemy. It's such a horrible place to be in mentally.
Yeah.
And not having control over when one's going to pop up, or I certainly didn't initially, but I haven't had one in a very, very long time.
And you can start to shrink your life as well with anxiety. That's the cruel thing about it, is that you think, I know you mentioned that you were worried about you had them sometimes when you were driving, and then you stopped driving, and then you weren't working, and
Yeah.
it's the shrinking of your life around it. Actually, that's what makes anxiety worse, because your body's being given the signal. I was right to warn you. And then it will warn you again in similar situations. And so it's such a cruel thing because it can be really upsetting. So what did you do to help yourself with the anxiety? Is there anything else you've done aside from quitting drinking?
Journaling, writing things down. I'm a reader, though, to be honest. I kind of like to educate myself on things. And a lot of the books that I read to do with sobriety kind of all touched on the same subject. And it seems to be a really, really common theme amongst people that have quit, is how much less and how much reduced their anxiety is once they have quit. When I quit, I was still at uni, so I can't say like I had loads of time to go to the gym and this and that and the other. And I did have more of a focus on getting my work done and just getting to the end of my degree. But the anxiety that I had about that, because obviously you're doing presentations and things like that where you've got to stand up, and that was something that used to cripple me. The thought of doing it used to cripple me. And then I did notice that when I quit, it wasn't that bad. It was kind of like I used to almost like have catastrophic thinking. If that makes sense, it was always worst case scenario thinking. I wouldn't say I'm best case scenario. I would say that I'm leveling out a little bit. In certain circumstances, having that worst case scenario thinking is actually beneficial. If you're working in critical care, you're kind of always looking at, okay, so what's going to go wrong? What can we do to kind of like stop anything, bad from happening, what signs are we looking out for, you know, what's the patient doing, is there going to be any bleeding, what can we do next? It's always looking at what we can do next. Probably actually quite why that emergency situation I seem to thrive in, like
Yeah.
levels of high stress I seem to thrive in, but it's not nice when it's all the time.
Yeah. If you could imagine the worst case, you can prepare for it. That's what you tend to
Yes.
think. And like in your job,
Yeah.
that's incredibly useful. But like you say, in everyday life,
When
that's
you
just
come home,
exhausting.
you don't, yeah, it is exhausting.
To be fair, in your job, the what ifs and the terrible things could happen. But actually, the what ifs and the terrible things that you think in real life, they are very unlikely to happen.
Yeah. So I was thinking for years, or, you know, having a couple of drinks in the evening, that's going to calm things down for me. But it wasn't. It was doing the direct opposite of that. And it's taken only now, when I've stopped, for me to realise just how chaotic everything was. I think you're constantly trying to catch up with yourself when you're drinking alcohol. When you stop, there is that level of quiet. And I can come in from work now. Yeah, I've got a few bits to do, you know, cleaning up and sorting the kids out for bed. But then it's kind of like, okay. And you can literally feel yourself winding down properly. And then
Yeah.
you're ready for bed, you're ready to go to sleep, and then you're ready to start the next day with more energy.
So when it comes to the medical profession then, so obviously you've done lots of training, and were you aware at all of the link between anxiety and alcohol?
I was more kind of like aware of the physical aspects of alcohol and the effect that it had on the body. But again, that was kind of like looked into more as I was studying my degree, as I started understanding body systems more and how they all work individually, but yet how they work together. And this, when I've mentioned previously about me stopping for a month here, a month there, my anxiety had improved. But do you know what? I think subconsciously I wanted to stay a little bit ignorant because I didn't really want to face the whole truth.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I really started to dive into it and reading lots of books, because I just thought, right, there's no escaping it. I need to know the truth now. If I'm going to do this properly, if I'm going to quit completely, then I want to know the truth. I want to know everything that I can find out about it. I want to read studies, and I did. And so I have all this information on board now. But even
Yeah.
this is what I'm saying, you know, even with all this information, it still doesn't stop the fear of missing out. You really have to do keep on top of that.
You do. Because people say about going to the GP and things, don't they? And saying that they don't drink. Or I think somebody said to me the other day, they went to their GP and they said, well, you want to worry when you drink as much as your doctor, flippantly. And I think there is such, even in the medical profession, nobody really wants to admit the truth to themselves.
No. I mean, I hear people talk all the time at work about it. And I think it's, there's a lot more awareness around it now.
You're doing operations, like you say, where somebody's actually got, and it's very obviously alcohol linked, or accidents that have happened through alcohol. It must be very difficult at the end of that shift not to have a conversation about that.
Yeah, it comes up. It comes up. It's the same with like eating and things like that as well. There's quite a lot of people that I work with now that are vegan and that don't eat meat. There are open discussions about alcohol and the damage that it causes. Little by little, these conversations, they all have an effect somewhere. They all go in. And the more patients that you see that are suffering, whether it's directly linked to alcohol consumption or it's related to that through an accident or whatever, you're kind of thinking, yeah, this is not good. Look at the amount that has been spent on patients that, you know, as a direct, either directly or linked because of alcohol. All you've got to think about is, any A&E that is busy Friday, Saturday night, how many people are in there due to alcohol related incidents?
Yeah, my mum loves those A&E programs, watching all the, you know,
yeah.
I'm sure you love them as well. Might seem like a busman's holiday for you, but but yeah, she loves watching them, and she's always saying, you've got to watch this, you've got to watch that. I'm too squeamish to watch things like that, but she loves them, and she says it's always alcohol. You don't realize how much it is and how much flack the staff, medical staff and the teams take from people that are drunk.
Yeah. Do you know, I've hardly had any doctor's visits, just thinking about something a bit off-piste here. Hardly had any doctor's visits. So I haven't been asked, how many units do you drink? None, actually. And that was really nice. I was just like, yes. So yeah, first time I can say none. I don't have to sit there calculating, being horrified at how many I actually have had.
A GP once said to me, like, we take everything with a pinch of salt. Whatever you say, we double it because we know you've halved it.
I must admit that was quite nice. Just actually being able to say zero.
If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, then head back to the 9th of Jan on your podcast timeline with Leanne. And just to remind you, if you head to my website, louisaevans.com, you will find the Sober Resilience course, where you can use code RESILIENCE544 to get a massive 30% off. You'll also find a range of hypnosis recordings on so many subjects, from confidence boosting through to enjoying exercise or finding weight loss easy, alongside ones to support your sobriety. If you use the code SOBERREBEL, all one word, you'll be able to buy one, get one free on all of those recordings. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests over this last couple of years for their openness and honesty. And the podcast will be back in its regular fortnightly slot very shortly. Have a great day.